This season of Perf Bites is brought to you by Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. HPE has the expertise and solutions you need to transform your business or government and change the world. Learn more at hpe.com. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, accelerating next. And Flood.io. We sort out the infrastructure so you can spend more time testing. Flood.io is load testing simplified. Learn more at www.flood.io.
It's time for Perf Bites.
What the f*** is Perf Bites?
The fourth square meal of the day.
Don't bogart the Perf Bites.
F*** waffles. Microwave ready. Add nutritional value to your brain.
Right up jackalope.
It's time for Perf Bites with your hosts Mark Tomlinson, James Pulley, and Howard Chorney.
Perf Bites.
Whatever.
Hey, it's time for Perf Bites. And here you are again at the other end of the radio. We're on this end. You're on that end, so we're talking into the microphone, and then there's a bunch of time that goes in between, and then it comes out on your side of the radio. And James, you're here with me.
Yes, yes. There's a lot of nanoseconds between us and them.
That's true. A lot of nanoseconds.
They're really short, but there's a lot of
probably millions of them. Yeah, they're short, but you don't make fun of them because they have a little, I'm a short second kind of thing.
Yeah.
Short person. Yeah.
Yeah.
So welcome again to another ceremoniously impertinent episode of Perf Bites with your magnanimous hosts, James Pulley, and myself, Mark Tomlinson. Howard is not with us tonight on this recording, and you know, that happens sometimes.
Yeah.
We had him. It was nice. Yeah. We had him on the New Year's show. It was nice.
He will be back. Don't anyone worry. Howard will be back. Yeah. He's on a special mission for us right now.
He is on a special mission. He's on assignment. Doing his job somewhere. Exactly. So welcome everybody. Today we're going to spend some time talking about a topic that was sent in from somebody, one of our listeners. It was quite a while ago and it just popped up back for me that maybe we should talk about this. So we're going to talk about performance benchmarking and we'll get back to that in a second. But first, as usual, James, kick us off. We have our usual announcements here.
Yes, everybody. Thank you. Announcements are short and sweet. Please feel free to email us with any question or thought that you may have at ask@perfbytes.com or #poundperfbytes on the Twitter. Upcoming conference and events to see us at, you can go to Dynatrace Perform in Las Vegas, February 6th through the 9th. So that's just coming up in a little bit less than a month. Whopper in New Zealand the next week. Wellington, New Zealand, February 15th to the 16th, 2017.
Yeah, we'll actually be down there like the 12th, 13th, 14th. We'll be down there before this. So if somebody is just can't really come to Whopper, they could still come and hook up with us. We could come meet down there.
Yeah, You know, Rue Burgers, beer.
Yeah.
And you know, because there's only so much time you can spend with the hobbits and Gandalf.
It's exactly right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
And then after that.
We're gonna hop over to the land down under, is my understanding.
Yes. We'll be in Sydney, I think on the 19th, 20th, CAST. So there's a bunch of folks going over there for CAST. So we want to reach out to them and say, you know, hey, guys, if you're in Sydney for CAST, I guess it's CAST X. It's like TEDx, CAST X.
Ah.
It's a down under. They got their own version, which is pretty awesome. So we'll see some folks in Sydney for a couple of days, and we'll be in Melbourne, I think, by Tuesday night. And then Wednesday morning also, maybe Wednesday morning we're going to Melbourne. So Tuesday night, Sydney. Wednesday morning in Melbourne, going to do a webinar. So we'll hopefully we can hook up with Stuart Moncrief and some of the, maybe Mikhail Pogorbitsky would be great down in Melbourne. There's some meetups. So we'll actually put these out on our Twitter feed with our good friends. Andy Grabner is going to be coming with us from Dynatrace. So we're going to go do this whole tour, be some live podcasting, interviews. We're going to bring along a bunch of the Perf Bites stopwatches and give them away. So that'll be fun. So we'll be there in Melbourne until I think the 22nd, 23rd, right?
I'm heading out on the 23rd.
Yeah. Well, cool. And then we take a little break. We'll be back here doing normal life back in the States. And everything will have resume its normal clockwise rotation. Like your blood actually rotates the other way when you're at the other side of the planet. Do you know that?
Yeah, bytes go down the other wire.
Packets, photons circulate the other way when they're going down the fiber connection from New Zealand.
So just a scant less than a month after being in New Zealand, We're going to be in Phoenix for the spring 2017 Software Test Professionals Conference. That's March 14th through the 17th. I'll be there for a Perf Bytes podcast. I don't have a presentation. Mark, I know you've got some presentations there.
I do. I have a Dan Billing and I are doing a functional sort of non-functional testing for functional testers. So if you know somebody who wants to learn performance testing and maybe even security testing, but they've been traditionally a functional tester or an automated functional testing person, automation person, this is a good half-day workshop with Dan. I think I'm doing a keynote. I think I have another session. And, you know, we do our, I just do all sorts of stuff. Mostly we come and have drink some scotch with us, hang out. One-on-one mentoring, that's what we call it.
Yes.
Yes, we can mentor you on things.
And then a week after that, you're in Brighton.
Yeah, actually, Vernon, my good friend Vernon Richards, we're going to, he's coming down, so we're both going to host Test Bash Brighton. So we'll probably go down Tuesday, come through London Tuesday, Wednesday, and then I think Test Bash is actually Thursday and Friday that week. So it should be a totally good time, and we'll see everyone from the normal Brighton. Someday we got to get you over there, James.
And one other item to note, Dr. Martha, gallery show, and sir,
if you
would fill in the details.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So Dr. Martha, the sexy Irish voice of Perf Bytes, has an art show actually at the Jed Williams Gallery, so jedwilliamsgallery.com. In Philadelphia. So if you're around for just a few weeks in Philadelphia for the first 2 weeks of February, and if you're on the, you want to check out some of Martha's art in person, and if you're in the market to maybe get a nice piece of abstract art on your wall to help you contemplate your situation in life or dilemmas or be creative, it's a great way to go. So Martha, congratulations to Martha on the show. But yeah, if you're ever interested and you wanted to actually see her art in a small gallery setting, it's a great time to go see that stuff. So that's at jedwilliamsgallery.com.
There's no combination that works better than high-proof alcohol, a performance test, and abstract art.
Sure. I think that's why I'm still alive. Just getting the magic trifecta there. And some people would argue that you should take a hallucinogenic of some sort. I've never really needed that.
Well, you know, the hours that you stay up doing performance testing pretty much guarantees the hallucinogenic effect.
It does have the same effect. I'll give you that as much. Yeah. So James, so thanks very much. So if there's some of the events that are on the radar screen thus far, come out and see us. We'll get you information on the barbecue, maybe some stuff after March. I think I'll keep you posted, James. You know, the CMG, I won this award, through CMG when I went out and gave the presentation. Very honored to actually win the award. But it supports travel, so I already have some conversations with CMG chapters in Connecticut and in Boston, as well as Ohio, and maybe even further west.
Cool.
And so I'll keep you posted on those opportunities. Again, it's a particular talk that I gave at CMG last November. But I'm game to come. If you are an active CMG chapter member, or if you even want to learn about your local CMG chapter member, let me know. Just shoot us an email at getmesomecfg@perfbytes.com. That'll work.
And already I'm planning on being in the Tucson area in early June. And just after my birthday in August, I will be in northern Wisconsin.
Yes. Yeah. That should be fun.
June is a nice 100th anniversary of the family dairy barn.
I'm
not kidding.
I know. That's pretty amazing. That's a lot of years of dairy cows.
Yes. So Mark, I believe we have some news items to cover.
Yeah, it's a little light. You know, I think people just don't do that much. It's January. Maybe people are still a little getting back into the groove of working.
Yeah.
And so there isn't a whole lot going on. One of the things that you had found about AppDynamics, and if nobody knows what AppDynamics is, they do, they're an APM vendor. They do performance profiling. In the old world, which diagnostics was how we would term that, application diagnostics. So they're sort of competitors in that space, or vendors in the space around APM. and application stuff. Apparently, they're going to go down and do an IPO. They're not just going to go get acquired, but you had read an article from Bloomberg, I think, so late last year.
Yeah, so there was an article in Bloomberg around September of last year, and then there was another note on LinkedIn late last month that seemed to suggest the same type of item was in the works, that an IPO was imminent. And for those who are not familiar with the IPO path, there is a go silent period before the IPO actually hits. And that may be the clue that Bloomberg picked up on, is this go silent behavior that is very specific. So if you see it, it's like, that there's only a couple of reasons for that.
Yeah. Either everyone got killed. That can happen.
Yeah.
But it's usually public knowledge when that happens.
Yeah.
The go silent is, or they've been, they do diagnostics and probably some sort of deep packet inspection kind of thing. So for all we know, the NSA just shut them down. So they, maybe they're all spies.
No, they're still out there.
Okay, they're still out there. Yeah, right. They're probably still selling. Sales guys still got quota, even if they got to be quiet.
That's true.
And then it's hard to close a deal when you can't talk about the features of the product. and this goes along, especially in last fall, because last fall, especially September, October, was when HPE and Micro Focus was looking at the assets and doing that acquisition. So there was a lot of quiet time with those guys, too. The other one that just came to mind recently, and I think this also happened last fall, Grid Tools. If anyone used, I think it's called Grid Tools, gridtools.com. Got acquired by CA. It's a test data management solution similar to Delphix. TDE was the, or TDM, I think it was. Sorry, that's transparent data encryption. TDM from HP had the data management solution. So if you're getting one of, I tell people if they're getting into the continuous testing game, you got to have your simulator skills totally top notch, and you also got to get your test data management stuff.
Yeah, and I can't reinforce this enough. We're seeing far too many data breaches that are occurring in QA environments directly related to the use of production data.
Yeah,
take the time, invest in a set of tools to actually build your data.
Yeah, that'll be good. Another one you brought up here was a networking. Doxis, who is Doxis?
So Doxis is the cable industry standard for signaling and speed for cable modems, in essence.
Oh, yeah.
And Doxis 3.1 is now out on the market and is supporting speeds of up to 10 gig on the download and 1 gig on the upload. So that's across coaxial cable. So as long as you have the hybrid fiber network to actually get the coaxial to the house, you no longer have to deal with the issue of adding a fiber access node of fiber all the way to the premise to get the really high speeds.
Well, and you can leverage a lot of, I would call it historic, not ancient, but a historic coax infrastructure. I don't think these guys are just working on either end with compression algorithms, faster microprocessors on either end. But the actual coax infrastructure is still just cable coax, which as almost every house has something like that in it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
why dig up the road if it's already there?
Well, I'm on Fios. You know, I like the photons. Photons, they're knowable. They travel at one speed. They don't mess around.
And you know what? They can't carry current.
That's true.
That's the one thing about a coaxial cable. Get a lightning strike, it can carry current.
Yeah, and fiber can't. But you can't, if you look in the end of fiber, you can go blind.
Well, it depends upon what you're looking at on the fiber, there, Mark.
That's right. Yeah, depends on what the photons actually do to your retina.
Yeah.
That'd be good. Yeah. So Doxis going up to 10 gig on copper, so there's still hope for you guys. That'll be nice.
Yeah.
And then the next one here is Datadog. Does anyone out there use Datadog?
Now, I've heard from a number of people who do use Datadog. I don't use it particularly, but they've announced a new feature called Notebooks, which is an interactive environment to help DevOps teams explore application performance data, create reproducible postmortems, build, run books, and document the infrastructure. So think about this as kind of a super wiki that has a lot of dedicated hooks for data related to application performance.
live graphs. Yeah. This is a cool idea. Good for them.
Yeah.
That's nice. And you think about chat ops. A lot of people talk about chat ops, where you put little bots that actually tell you what systems are doing. And then it's a lot like HAL from 2001, the Space Odyssey. Don't you think?
I just want that camera with the big red light on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
To say, what's wrong, James?
Hello, James.
What are you doing, James?
Yes,
don't
exactly.
worry, Hal. Don't worry.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal. Yes. So that's pretty cool. And then, of course, remember a while ago we suggested that maybe we come up with a different geographic shape for market analysis? Was it the dodecahedron?
Yes, yes.
Oh, yes.
As opposed, you know, something three-dimensional as opposed to this two-dimensional magic quadrant thing that, Gartner uses. Yes. That way, you know, we could sell a three-dimensional slice to a whole bunch of different vendors where they could be peaked in their wedge.
Yeah. So in the December, at the end of the year, usually have the updates to the Gartner Magic Quadrant. So the Magic Quadrants for APM have came out, and I think there's a couple. AppDynamics is probably up there. I think Dynatrace is probably still
New Relic's in there.
New Relic's in there. Yeah,
there's some up and comers as well.
Yeah, exactly. Now, other analyst firms, like we say, they have normal quadrants, whereas Gartner has the Magic Quadrant. And since we can't really, you can't, like, it's a magician's code of ethics. You can't tell what the magic actually is. So if you ever ask the analyst, why is this person in there? Like, well,
it's there because
secret.
Doug Henning blessed it.
That's right. Right. Blackstone.
It's
right.
Magic.
Magic.
It's magic.
Magic. Exactly. All right. So, not a lot of news. I mean, in really the performance world, the APM guys are looking good. Infrastructure for cable is good, but, you know, so we're still waiting on that big real announcement out of Micro Focus to tell us what really happened, what happened with HP. So hopefully anyone out there is listening from our HP partners and HPE folks, you know, let us know. You probably can't tell us anything.
Well, you know, you're welcome on the show anytime.
Yeah, come on. Just talk around it.
Micro Focus, HP, come on. Just chat with us.
Exactly. All right, James, we'll take a little bit of a break and we'll come back and we'll dive into the deep end of benchmarking.
Yes.
Lightsquare.com is proud to be a sponsor of Perf Bytes. Lightsquare.com is a unique offering for performance tuning as a service for web architectures. Lightsquare delivers tuning recommendations in under 72 hours without the typical investment in tools, license fees, or consultants where we do the work up front. With Lightsquare, you only pay based on the level of improvement. Find out more about Lightsquare's unique pricing model at www.litesquare.com/pricing.
There you go. That's right. Okay, James. You know, we've done, at the time that Sandeep sent us his email, and he sent it in to askatperfbytes.com. So if you guys send this in, we'll eventually end up on the show with us. And so this has taken us a little while to get back to Sandeep, but I'm glad to just kind of bounce it off James. It's like, gosh, we should go back and do this thing. And I'll just read it for you really quickly. And he wrote to askatperfbytes.com. Hi, James and Mark. Like always, thanks for the great content that you've been sharing with the community. Of course, they always thank us for doing this. It's, you know, we just do it because we love it. It's, you know, just comes out. It's nice to be thanked, but, you know, Sandeep, it's touching if you want to thank us. Sandeep writes, may I request you to talk about performance benchmarking process, as it's one of the many topics that has very little information out there. I tend to agree with Sandeep. Yep. It's very true. Even though, strictly speaking, benchmarking, in his understanding, means comparing the performance of your application, hardware, and software configuration with others. I have seen many instances where customers ask us to benchmark their application where there is no comparison available. And that was the crux of the real thing that really got me thinking about
responses. I could see the point of confusion.
Yeah. In this case. Like, hey, you need to benchmark this against what? Do you want to benchmark something? And I'll give you a real life story about this. What they really mean by benchmark is assurance, quote unquote, that the combination of hardware and software is able to make their current and future needs, sort of like hardware qualification testing. Your inputs in any previous talks that I might have missed or in a future podcast is greatly appreciated. Warm regards, Sandeep. Well, Sandeep, warm regards to you for writing into us. Thank you very much. I think this is an excellent topic because it does lead to confusion, James, for a lot of people.
It does.
What's the most confusing thing in there that you think that Sandeep is pointing out?
Well, a lot of people use benchmark as a synonym for load test.
Yeah, especially in his situation when he's basically saying, it sounds like he's a consultant. He shows up and works with a customer. Customer says, we want you to benchmark our system.
Yeah.
And I think what we're about to share is really what's the difference between a benchmark and a load test. And that's kind of at the heart of this. But let's kick things off and just say, you know, what is a benchmark?
So a benchmark has a couple of characteristics associated with it. One, it is fixed in its configuration for an extended period of time. In fact, if you go to industry benchmarks, they'll usually have a version number on them. So, mm-hmm. you know, version 1.0 of benchmark X was there from 1982 to 1989, and version 2 was from this time to this time. So it is fixed, period, mm-hmm. end of story. So you're not going to change data. You're not going to change the back end, front end, nothing. It just fixed. And generally, you're holding one item as a element of change that you're looking at. And in most cases for benchmarks, it's hardware and it's configuration. You may have some operating system elements that you can change, but in most cases it is hardware. And you're looking at hardware metrics. Now there are some exceptions that we'll get into in the examples in just a moment.
Yeah.
But generally it's a known app, it's a defined set of data, it's a defined execution model. And once everything is in place, you just kind of push a button and you wait and you get a number.
Yeah. And so it's sort of like saying, here's a common workload. And I'll just take email as an example. You know, email messaging is a fairly homogeneous, you know, sure, there's attachments, sure, there's whatever, but there's a basically very consistent model for that activity. So let's say you're going around as a load tester like Sandeep is doing performance testing, and somebody says, well, we're a vendor manufacturer of an email server.
Yep.
And so that's a very standard, well-known model of traffic and workload. So we would like to benchmark our email server and then compare it to Microsoft Exchange or Lotus Notes or Gmail, if you could, per se. But that's the idea that if Sandeep's getting called in, that's where that confusion is. If it's a custom application written in .NET or Java, that's no one else has that application. There's no industry-wide benchmark for your custom app with its features and its data and its workload. So that's the first thing to help Sandeep, I think, separate these are benchmarks are usually industry standard, industry-wide normal models for some kind of usage or traffic or interaction or configuration, whereas load testing and the words, we'll get into the subtleties of how the words change, but mostly custom apps that are built, or even let's say you do a custom configuration on top of SharePoint, there's still fairly custom interaction. Maybe there's a different, you know, shim on the front, different things like that. Separating the two things out, industry apps and platforms and hardware and software configurations, that's benchmarking. Load testing happens on the other side. We should talk a little bit, load testing happens more in dynamic apps.
Yes.
So let's talk through some of the examples on industry benchmarks then.
So
and the biggest one that comes to my mind from me working in the SQL Server world with Gunter Zink and the guys from HP and doing Superdome testing and the Unisys guys on all the big Unisys boxes was the TPC benchmark.
Yes. It is the dominant way for one database vendor to compare to another database vendor for throughput, cost, There's now an extension to it related to power. So, you know, transactions per watt type of situation.
And thermals as well.
Exactly.
There's people that measure green computing on T-Delta and thermal systems. So the thing to note here, James, is that let's say I'm working at Microsoft. So I'm going to get SQL Server running on a Superdome.
Yep.
And I'm going to help Gunter run a TPC benchmark, which is the exact same traffic, the exact same data that you would go to Alex Podelko and get together. And let's say at Oracle, you want to run an Oracle benchmark, a TPC benchmark, on the same Superdome hardware, but you're going to install Sun OS and Oracle and run on a different, same hardware, different OS kernel, and probably different RDBMS, different database, but we're both going to run the same data and workload,
exactly.
Right?
And I might even throw another item into the wrench. Let's say I have a spare piece of hardware sitting in my office that's a couple generations old, and I put MySQL on it, which is another relational database engine, and which also, curiously, is owned by Oracle at this point. And I could run TPC-C against that as well. And what's nice about the TPC-C benchmark is it includes provisions for size of hardware on how you have to expand your data so that I can compare my two-generation-old computer that's sitting in the corner gathering dust with a small disk array to one that is a Superdome that has a couple of petabytes of storage, and I can get numbers that I can relate to each other.
Yeah. So there is some governance over the different types of configuration that you run against. So if, like you say, James, if there's a bunch of big guys running with a EMC DMX or a Hitachi Giant SAN behind their TPC-E is probably more common with the really big storage. You would never publish that benchmark. Let's say I'm working for Microsoft. I mean, I'm a vendor. I'm an ISV, right? I'm going to create a SQL Server, and I'm going to compete in the marketplace and say that my performance of the SQL Server kernel is faster than Oracle.
Now so I'm gonna cause you to stop right there and say, now Mark, if you're going to publish your benchmark results, you know, there's some things you're going to have to do.
Yeah, this is the interesting thing. And TPC is probably the one that I'm most familiar with just in terms of the actual governance of the body. The TPC is a council. It's the Database Performance Council, right?
Yep.
It's a transaction. And so that council is governance. There are dues. It costs money to publish the paper. So unless you're really in the business as a vendor, you know, anyone can do a TPC benchmark. But yeah, you'll actually contribute and get audited on how you ran the test, and you have to submit all of the evidence, all of the details.
In fact, the auditor is on site while you're running it if you're going to be publishing the results.
Yeah. And so that's how, if let's say I'm the CIO, James, let's back up from Sandeep's situation and say his customer, the CIO, says, you know, he's got one engineering manager that says, well, I think we need to go with MySQL on this type of platform. And of course, the ops guy's like, look, I would never do that. If it's my budget, I'm going to spend it on SQL Server running on this commodity type hardware because we can do the same thing, blah, blah, blah. And so the CIO is sitting there, look, I don't know. I got three different super genius guys sitting in front of me telling me how to make a decision on what to implement. Why don't I just go look at the benchmarks? And it's this sort of externally verified and governed certification of these benchmark results that allows a non-performance person to say, well, this is a common workload. I should be able to just go with this platform, and that's our budget. And usually it's decision making. And benchmarks work a lot for sales as well, because benchmarks are we can perform better than the competition, and we all agree to a neutral ground to compete. It's like the Olympics.
Or the inverse. I have a defined piece of hardware it's going to run on. Let's just install all three solutions, run the benchmark between the three, and see how it shows up.
Sure. So you could run. Let's say you're running a SQL Server on Microsoft, you could run that on Itanium, you could run it on HP, Dell, White Box Asus and a Unisys box, and put, you know, try all four of those with different hardware, but you're still a Microsoft shop.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how you can mix and match the benchmarks around TPC. But you guys get the idea that this is something usually a vendor does when they're operating within the industry, competing within the industry, but also contributing to the broader knowledge base of how things can perform. What other benchmarks are out there, James? You came up with a whole list here.
Yeah, so there are some really interesting ones. So let's start off with the issue of virtualization. VMware came up with their own benchmark to answer the question of how many virtual machines can my box support with reasonable performance. It's called called VMark.
Yeah.
So you take it.
VMark.
Yeah, you just take it.
VMark.
Yeah, essentially.
Like VMware Mark.
Yeah.
Not Mark Me, not me.
Yeah.
But it's a Mark.
Yeah.
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 So in this one is very, again, to a virtualization layer, instructions are instructions, right? It doesn't know whether you're moving, it's just moving a mouse, or, you know, all the different activities are very dynamic within a VM. But let's say you're just doing virtual desktop, a lot of people running office applications, email applications, and browsing. It's a very standard model of traffic.
Exactly. And what it's trying to do is it's going to try and open up as many as possible. It's going to take timing off of it. It's going to take resource information. And when your machine reaches saturation point, you're going to get a score. And that score allows you to compare that setup with another VMware setup.
There you go. So should I run my VMware on a bunch of Sun hardware? Should I run VMware on Dell boxes? Should I run VMware on HP boxes and different storage? Who knows?
Exactly.
But you can, before you spend a lot of money on all the different combinations, you could just go look at the VMark benchmarking results from the labs and say, that looks like the best one. Let's spend our money on configuration X. Yeah.
Next up is the Spec Benchmark family. And this includes a lot of benchmarks. It includes some CPU benchmarks. It includes workload benchmarks. So, Mark, you were mentioning, that gets confusing, benchmark. Mark.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
So, Mark. Mr.
Yeah.
Tomlinson, you were mentioning benchmarks recently involving email. So Spec has actual email benchmark solutions. They have cloud benchmark solutions. So there's a lot of things that involve standard workloads. Once again, this whole idea of standardization, repeatability, all in a box, put it in place, run the benchmark, get your score, then you can do the same thing against another installation and another configuration and see how it measures up.
Yeah. And you'll see that some of these benchmarks, a lot of them can be like application level, like TPC would be database traffic, right? Whereas the next one, Passmark, is like really network specific, right?
It is. Passmark is a vendor that also has a lot of benchmarking solutions, but they seem to concentrate more in the network arena.
Yeah.
And that is contrasted with the next one that comes up, which is the Storage Performance Council.
Yeah. So TPC would be like transaction performance. SPC is the Storage Performance Council. They're very similar. So your big storage vendors who have all now competed on SSD and competed on, you know, flashback SAN and all these different kinds of things, they're all competing within their own. So they maybe have standard ways to run I/O traffic, you know, without, who cares what the app was, but here's the comparison of the storage track itself. The other one I'm thinking of is similar to going back up the stack into applications for email, JetStress. So you're looking at a JET database like behind Microsoft Exchange.
Yeah, so you can size your email servers.
Mm-hmm. And then if you want to run Exchange on Dell, and Dell storage versus running it on HP with Hitachi storage versus running it on Unisys with, you know, build it yourself array. I mean, there's all sorts of different ways that you could compare those. The same Exchange traffic is standard every time you run it, but you change out the hardware and infrastructure to do that.
Exactly.
What else we got? There's just a whole bunch.
So we've got some CPU benchmarks on the Whetstone and Drystone synthetic benchmark scale. We have some embedded computing benchmarks. Mm-hmm. So if you're not familiar with the embedded computing arena, this covers everything from the new to the market Raspberry Pi down to specialized embedded computing modules, and you need to have a measurement of computing power or overall efficiency on those platforms. So yeah. CoreMark is the benchmark for an embedded computing board.
Yeah, and the CoreMark also takes into consideration power usage differently, because a lot of embedded computing now is done on lithium-ion batteries or very, very small capacity portable batteries.
Yep.
Like your cell phone, very, very similar. Yeah. And then a vendor that we know very well, we actually just saw, we saw him at Dynatrace Perform like 2 years ago, Ixia.
Ixia. So Ixia does the Wi-Fi Alliance certification suite.
Yeah.
So in there you have some functional tests, you have some performance tests, and you have a benchmark. So you can actually see performance deviations from one wireless access point model to another.
Very wild. Now, here's the next two that are pretty interesting, because like all things in performance, it got cloudified.
Yep.
And it, and Steve Souders came along and blessed it with his Steve Souderness, Why Slowness web.
I believe instead of doing the cross like the Catholic Church, he does a big circle with something that looks like a little apple stem.
Yeah, that works. That could work. Yeah. That'd be fine. But there are benchmarks for running JavaScript in a browser or standard browser functions. So you can imagine that there's a set of different pages standard that everyone will load. Now, back in the day, I remember .NET Pet Shop, and there was also Java Pet Store, I think it was.
Yeah, vaguely.
Yeah, and these were like canned apps with a set of canned scripts that would get loaded into a browser. And it was used to, you're going to load the same, .NET versus Java type benchmarking using the same actual code in the website and the same data store behind it. The Sun Spider is a browser speed test, again, around JavaScript. But then you went on to, I think, V8, which was the older version of Google's benchmark for JavaScript performance loaded by a browser. Now it's Google Octane. So if you look at Google Octane, let's say you wanted to compare which browser runs my JavaScript website the fastest. So this is a shout out to all the functional testers who are like, well, if I want to learn performance, what should I do? Ah, look up these different JavaScript profiling or JavaScript benchmarks, and you can see, which one is quote unquote the faster browser. But I don't think, just like the Java Pet Store, I mean, nobody's running the Java Pet Store to make millions of dollars in e-commerce, right, James?
No.
They're fake pets. No. So this is where it becomes different. Like your app with your JavaScript could run really slowly in the same browser combination that runs really fast in Google Octane. So that's where you're really saying, hey, this browser on this laptop with this OS and this much memory is the fastest Octane. And therefore, I should tell my developers that that's what they should code to. Your developers could still code really crappy JavaScript and have terrible browsers, right?
Always hate it when I find sleep statements in my JavaScript.
Because I couldn't figure out the timing.
Yeah.
Couldn't figure out how to code a semaphore for my async processing. Exactly. And I don't trust the browser.
So I'll just sleep and then I'll just check in and then I'll go back to sleep for a bit.
Yeah, it looks good. It's not good, but it looks good, maybe. So really, we looked at a bunch of these, honestly, benchmarking for Sandeep. If you do, just hit the Wikipedia page for benchmarks. There is a long list. But I want to talk more, James, just about understanding how there's a lot of people maybe listening to us talk that are like, well, benchmark is this abstract term. Like, what are you, you're running load. Okay, there's load running. A benchmark, if we really narrow down what is this dilemma around, is it benchmark versus load testing? I want people to keep in mind, benchmarks are really still just taking measurements.
Yes.
So if you're like in TPC running queries, you're going to measure the response time of the standard set of queries in a TPC benchmark or email send and receive. So response time, resource consumption,
throughput.
Latencies, throughput for sure.
Power.
That, and Yeah, power, cooling, you name it. These benchmarks, anytime you take a measurement, just like you do in your normal load testing, you're just taking those same measurements and you're saying, this is my golden measurement that is known for that particular configuration. So I know that setup for a TPCE benchmark will run 425 transactions per second. And that was we held that for, according to the rules, n number of hours of throughput on the standard data set.
And
that becomes a known measurement that is trusted by the fact that your results got audited and you published to the world. 425 transactions per second is a known baseline measurement or a starting measurement.
Now, when you do an audited test, this test also has to be repeatable. Now, you've heard me and Mark and other performance engineers talk about test repeatability. That's key, because if you can't repeat, is it really a test or is it a statistical anomaly? So when you have an audited benchmark that's going to be published, these tests absolutely have to be repeatable. And there's some things that go along with that. That means the app can't change. That means your test can't change. And that means your data can't change. So you have to have a way to roll back all data to a baseline as well.
Yeah.
And so when you start looking at a load test versus a benchmark, notice all the differences in moving parts that are coming into play. Are you going to get your developers to say, you know what? Developers, don't change anything. That's a really difficult argument, particularly in the agile DevOps universe that we live in these days.
Right.
And as soon as they change something, that means you have to update something potentially on your test. And the question of data, do you get an opportunity to roll back your data to a baseline every single time? You may be getting a new flash of data from production. God help us all if you are. Or you may have data that's constantly evolving as a baseline. Either way, you have movement along three vectors, which is your test, your app, and your data, which come together to make most load tests difficult as a benchmark because of the moving parts.
Yeah. Now, here I want to use exactly what you just said to tell a little story of an example where I was once, just like Sandeep, I was working with a customer at Microsoft. And we were working on their app. I think it was some kind of probably insurance application app or something like that. You know, it's taking the customer information and getting their address and their assets and liabilities and stuff. Sort of think about it like five steps in the process kind of app.
Yep.
.NET application, SQL Server. And part of what I was working with the developers, we also had a gentleman from the DBA staff, some of the database dev group at this same customer. And, you know, James, when you're working with customers in a lab setting, it's pretty intense, nonstop working, lots of test runs. And mostly our process was about optimization. So when I kept referring to the idea that, well, we have a baseline of where we started at the beginning of the engagement, and we're going to do multiple iterations to tune things. We're going to tune specific queries. We're going to change the configuration in .NET in the app server. We maybe change some configuration around memory. And we're basically going to optimize the code and the system in order to make it go faster. So it was a repetitive tune, repeat the test, analyze, tune, repeat the test, very standard kind of thing.
But I kept using this word. And in this case, the test becomes somewhat of a benchmark.
It is. And I kept referring to as a baseline, you know, was really just the previous run. Are we better or worse than the previous run? And the very first run was sort of our baseline. We know we have to be better than that, because if we're worse than our baseline, we've gone the wrong direction.
Yep.
But in that respect, we were benchmarking over and over again. And halfway through this engagement, I think it was 2 weeks, the DBA gentleman was basically saying, you know, I still want to know when you're going to let me do benchmarking. And I'm like, what do you mean benchmarking? And we had their hardware all set up for them and everything. He goes, well, I have to install our benchmark. And it turned out to be sort of a twisted version of a TPC, or it was like a standard kind of thing. And I think I remember like their head of the DBA team had a PhD in data science or something.
Oh, okay.
And, yes. Yeah. And so So here's all the business people with the developers actually optimizing an application to meet the objectives of the company and make customers happy and, you know, do move forward. But the DBA guy wanted to erase all of the company code and run this generic benchmark on the hardware that we were testing on.
So and they could measure it versus what they had in-house.
Yeah, and I didn't respect that the same way. So I probably owe that person a posthumous apology, but I didn't understand so much that what this fellow was trying to do was, I want to capture whatever you guys' magic you have done with drivers or whatever it is. I want to capture the performance in a generic way as a sample measurement, and then go back to their system at home, because they didn't have the same hardware at home, and say, how would it compare? Like, so I didn't know that. I thought I went to the guy once and I said, well, wait a minute, are you in the business? I mean, are you guys going to make money off of running TPC in production? They're like, no. And I'm like, so why are you spending time trying to do that? I mean, these are industry standard benchmarks that you can go get the data on. You're not auditing it. You're not. But he really did have a point. He just wanted to compare whatever magic hardware, software setup we had to go back home to their production systems, and they could say, well, we know what our systems are when we build them.
Yeah.
How do you compare? Do these numbers just look good because you're running on faster hardware, or did you guys actually optimize the code to be more efficient? Now, the truth at the end was it was better hardware. So yes, benchmarking wise, it was faster hardware and configuration. But yeah, we also, you know, optimized the heck out of the SQL queries. So that's one way to make sense of, how do I do load testing and optimizing and repeated runs? At the same time, you know, maybe with your customer, they're like, well, we have a benchmark of what we know a generic configuration is. And there's a lot of companies out there, James, you know, that this is our standard way to build a database server, and cookie cutter, you know, this is the way we build it. So the cloud changes all of this a lot, because, you know, you don't even have control over the hardware. You're just throwing data out there, and somebody else down the street in the garage builds out a storage array for you, right?
Yeah, we don't want to talk about database on a virtual machine and the whole, quality of the clock for anything that's time-stamped in the database. And we've had that dirty discussion about virtualization and clocks before.
Yeah, exactly. So my point about this guy, this thing about the difference is if you're benchmarking, really, anyone can do a benchmark, but if you're going to make it official, you're officially a vendor in the storage space or the networking space or hardware and servers or databases, you know, then you're working for a vendor, and then you really are, is this a formal benchmark? Or like this guy was working with in the lab, he's like, well, we kind of have a benchmark, a generic benchmark of our hardware at home. In the test environment, we want to run the same benchmark just so we can see apples to apples and say, well, just given the same identical workload, no other changes, we can compare that.
And by the way, if you're going to do that, you need to document what your benchmark is so everyone understands. And I'm going to point everyone to go to the Transaction Processing Council website, tpc.org, yep, and look up the TPC-C database benchmark. If you are writing a performance test plan or you are writing a benchmark to be used internally, that is an exceptional document. It shows all the different components you need to have in your performance test plan or in your benchmark. People always ask, well, what does a performance test plan look like? Go download that. Now, do you need one that runs 100 pages? Maybe not. Hopefully maybe not.
So I think the ultimate point is that the difference between a load test and a benchmark, as we've kind of said in a couple different ways here, James, we've sort of established that a benchmark is usually industry standard. It's a very constant model for a particular version of a hardware-software combination. And then a vendor usually runs that same test against a slightly different hardware configuration, slightly different software, new version of software, new version of SQL, new version of Oracle.
Or a customer can run it internally as well to look at your own hardware and your own configuration.
Yeah, because you can say, well, maybe before we really put this new stuff into production, let's at least run a benchmark to make sure we didn't mess some. Oh, look at this stuff at half duplex. Look at this one. But the difference between that and a load test, to Sandeep's real question, was a customer says, I want you to benchmark my application, but it's a totally custom app that has no industry approved model or workload. So he can't. That's a load test.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And that's really where the synonym comes into play, is that when it says, I want you to benchmark, I want you to load test, which means you're going to go and you're going to develop the load model. You're going to develop the data. You're going to develop the actual tests that are going to be executed in the performance test. And what's going to come out of that is you're going to come out of that with an application baseline, which then you might use as part of tuning. And you know, here comes the confusing part. In a benchmarking exercise where the test and the data and the app are held constant as you're changing different system configuration items to see if you can improve performance before you actually go back to the developers and say, guys, gals, we need some code changes.
Yeah, yeah. It's not just a configuration tuning work there. And that's the word baseline versus a benchmark can also confuse people. Which is where I like to reserve the word benchmark or benchmarking for what these industry vendors do. And I use the word baseline, like the starting point of your testing. Let's get a baseline and then start tuning and optimizing and figuring out where we go from there. You know, so they're almost interchangeable. But I like to keep them separate because other people may get confused if I use the word benchmark and they think, well, which benchmark? There are 14 open source benchmarks about blah, blah, blah. And we may be off down a tangent that is not productive versus saying we took a baseline and then we started our tuning exercises.
And for those of you who are curious, if you want to go look up TPC-C and VMware, there's a really interesting slide deck that's sitting out on the internet from the folks over at VMware. And I think maybe Dell or Compaq or HP were involved in this as well. But it comes down to the fact that, on TPC, we're a little bit slower if we're running in a virtual machine. I think we need a new benchmark.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why you have version 4 to version 5 of a given industry benchmark, because it's almost unfair as modern data. You had something like a star join, and certain vendors could do that, certain vendors couldn't. But now almost every vendor out there can do a star join, particularly in the NoSQL world. The concept of this quote unquote star join it actually is very prominent. Well, so what if your industry benchmark isn't even including workloads that exercise the latest and greatest inventions that are out there? So that's why the industry model goes to version 2, version 3 of the standard model, so that you can, once you're on modern hardware, modern versions of stuff, that's what you want to go to. But it doesn't change that often, James, I don't think.
I think in this case, the folks on the virtualization side of the house were just saying, we don't like the results. Well, we think we need a new benchmark altogether that shows better results.
Yeah, that could be. Yeah. So we've sort of talked about baselines and benchmarks and how they're different and load testing different. The one thing I want to mention is that when I started doing load testing in a V model or a long waterfall with really long release cycles, the idea of a benchmark made sense because you would take a run of the test. Maybe it took you 10 days to do all of that work just in execution. And you weren't going to have another release for a year, 18 months. I mean, some crazy thing like that. So you would still do repeated tests, maybe once a month. That finally, things moved much slower, James. I think to some extent, the idea of a benchmark being the standard workload, and then, you know, things didn't change that often. Now things change like crazy. So to some people, the language you might hear the word benchmark, and it seems, I don't want to say old school, but it seems that it's sort of doesn't apply to fast-paced, changing, dynamic, moving requirements and stuff like that.
Now, where a benchmark might work in this case is in the arena of web services, where the exposed API is non-volatile. You might have code changes underneath the covers, and you might have a workload which, say, is based upon expectations of 2 years out. And and in that case, you might have a very long-lived test, which becomes a benchmark. So every time a new API comes out, or a new definition of the API comes out, goes through functional qualification, then boom, it hits the benchmark.
Yeah. And then you would get, potentially in that longer poll for a release, you would get your standard benchmark results against the API. And then you may still have concurrently more exploratory load testing, stress testing, other types of tests that you want to go learn different things, tuning exercises,
sure.
SQL query optimizations, whatever kinds of app methods you wanted to go after. But at least you'd have one kind of a test that, and I have one that I do that's just, I call it the baseline run, because we're not vendors. These are custom apps. So it's just, this is your baseline run. We run the same baseline test, which is the first run that we run of any of the suites. And then we move on. Somebody says, oh, I'm really interested in the stress test because we did this different, blah, blah, blah. So that's great. We're still going to do that other testing, but we're pretty much every new combined release of all the interdependent pieces of a system go together, and we get the 1 hour baseline run, and we compare that run over run over run, release over release. So in a way, you're right, James, that is benchmarking, because that definition of that test is fairly consistent. I just don't use the word benchmark because I'm not a hardware or software vendor.
And I think that's fair. That's fair because if you're going to develop a benchmark, it is a standardized item. And realistically, you do need to go through the process internally of producing all of that documentation. So everyone who sees the result understands precisely what has gone into it and what comes out of it. And not only that, but what it means and the value to both engineering and to the business.
Yeah. There's also something, James, we've talked about where, you know, when you're trending information, let's say for the continuous kids that are listening right now, you're going to get, push the release, do the run. That's going to be kind of a baseline run every time it runs. So really continuous benchmarking or continuously load testing is doing a lot of this same stuff in a highly automated, frequent way. We talk about trending where if you were to improve something greater than 15%, like 15% slower, you would throw a flag because, wow, really getting worse.
I would throw a flag at less than that. I would throw a flag at 2% because over 36 builds, the time will double.
Sure. So looking at those trends over time, you want to have sort of automated. It could be an SLA if you called it that way, a legal thing, but also just a technical threshold that says if you're more than 2% or more than 5% slower, throw a warning, set the build to be red, don't auto push this stuff.
Yep.
You could also have, if it's 15% faster, which could be that someone commented something out and left something in the code commented, and they pushed it, and all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute, are we actually 15% faster? I mean, that's great, but maybe we're not doing something that we used to do. Maybe the simulator stopped working. Maybe something else is not committing data. So whether it's even, N number of 5% slower or 5% faster of the benchmark, like if somebody put together a hardware configuration for a TPC benchmark and it was 25% faster than any other hardware on the planet, would you just
can we say SSDs for indexes?
Yeah, exactly. You would pop the champagne and go, woohoo, that's great. And then you go back to the TPC benchmark people and you get an audit and they're like, wait a minute, this isn't valid. Like they'll point out that something else went wrong or something was wrong in the configuration because I've never
seen. Your data was too small for your size environment.
Didn't follow the rules of the TPC or whatever, and they'll there's people that go back and forth with the TPC to say no, it was valid, that was all indexes on an SSD or 100% cached in memory kind of stuff. So there's some really interesting things when that the same stuff that you would argue about, vendors would argue about in the governed audited benchmarking world, you actually want to do that. If you're just doing continuous type load testing, you really have a baseline. Your trend is the baseline. That's how you see it. And then if you have variation faster or slower, that either validates or invalidates your baseline. So you're like, wait a minute, this really is 15% faster. And we did all of our audits. Guess what? Our new baseline is 15% faster than it ever was before. And then you go pop the bottle of champagne and be like, woohoo, look, we're doing
and
great.
And then you go tell every developer to adjust their logging model.
And when you get things to go faster, what wasn't a logging nightmare now definitely is a logging nightmare because you're doing things faster.
No. What I'm saying, and everybody adjusts their logging model. It's like everybody stop logging as much as you were, because the code that logs the least is fastest.
That's good. That's exactly right. All right. Just one of the last things we want to talk about is just sort of who and when. We've sort of already talked about benchmarking for ISVs, like when you should be doing a benchmark. If you're in Sandeep's shoes and you're called into a first-time customer account and they're like, no, we really do want to benchmark it, Sandeep, one of the things they might be asking you to do is go get the results from the TPC or from the exchange benchmark or from these other benchmarks and actually run and compare their setup to the industry standard. So you may actually being called to do that, but it has nothing to do with a custom application with custom stuff. It's probably some kind of industry standard workload.
And it would be against email. Their hardware or their specific environment configuration, their web server, their Java virtual machine, their VMware setup, yeah. So on and so forth.
So it could be that the customer you're working with just wants to evaluate hardware. And so they're like, well, we just want the fastest hardware. Well, you know, if the real question I usually ask when I'm in that situation is, okay, great. You want to learn something about performance. Can you tell me, is it a custom application? How customized is it? And they might say, look, it's a standard vanilla Exchange implementation. It's a very straightforward SQL implementation behind SharePoint with a content database. Okay. I think I could maybe find an industry standard kind of workload model to do that kind of comparison for you. Are you doing a dog and pony show? You know what a dog and pony show is, right, James? It actually doesn't have dogs or ponies.
Yeah, I've driven those before.
Yeah. So the other thing I wanted to say to Sandeep is, if you're in a situation where you do have a fairly custom app, but that IT department, that customer, is actually going to three different hardware vendors saying, HP, we're going to take our super-duper cool custom app, we're going to run it on HP, compare that to Dell, compare that to IBM. And we got three vendors, and we're all going to do an RFP, and we want you to benchmark from the standard load test definition each of these three configurations.
And I've got a great story on that one, Mark. Several years ago, a customer asked us to help them evaluate several solutions for data mining. And they were NTR Teradata, Oracle Parallel Server, DB2 Parallel Edition, and Oracle was running on two different hardware platforms from two different vendors. And we actually had to, for that event, develop the benchmark, all of the queries, how often they're going to be run, what data sets, all the data that was going to be preloaded, and not only all of that, but we actually gave them all a defined start date and end time and how they were going to send the data to us so we could all aggregate it together and report it. Yep. And as it turns out, Teradata beat the snot out of all the other competitors in that case.
Yeah, I think one of the other ones I see in those bake-offs, the big data bake-offs, is also Netezza is one of the other ones. And now we've got some of the open source players like Influx and, what is it, Cassandra, I think, is the other Apache Cassandra database.
Yeah, but it's hard to beat those parallel editions of database solutions because they have data processing nodes, they have storage nodes, they have connections that are like InfiniBand connections that have multi-gigabytes of bandwidth between them on the back end.
And so that's one of the things I remember in TPC where you would define different types of data transactions, TPCe, and I think there's a couple others, is the other one, that also goes after, you know, some of these hardware, scaling out hardware in order to go to bigger throughput, whereas your traditional RDBMS on a 8-way, 16-way, 32-way, 64-way box, they're still scaling out, but they can't scale out as flexibly for data because of the architecture of the hardware. And so TPC says, well, here's the standard workload for that kind of model, and if these guys figured out how to scale out with InfiniBand across 40 nodes, and your Unisys box is there with 8 nodes at a max, you know what I mean? There may be hardware limitations in terms of scale out. So that's the one situation, I think, Sandeep, where he's in a situation where there is no previous comparison like you were, James. And so you're really defining a benchmark, and then you're going to employ that with 3 different vendors, stacks, set it up, compare them. And that is, it's different than iterative optimizing and load testing as part of a continuous release cycle or even a long release cycle. It's a project initiative where the real objective is tell me which one is the fastest and I'll buy it kind of thing.
It's like, and test that's exactly cars. What happened in that case.
Sure. And so that's why you also have a commitment to making it a fair test, and being that auditor. You know, Sandeep might be in a situation where he has to be very trustworthy and very even-handed and tempered in how he treats everybody and gets them fair information and fair auditing. So don't forget about that if you're in this situation. You are conducting a benchmark, a custom benchmark, we'll say, for your customer or evaluating these different vendors and configurations. You may be the you may have to be the trustworthy, impartial judge and auditor of your own test. So that's a good thing as well. The other thing I'll say is, like, even in my situation where I consider we doing load testing versus benchmarking is because we're always just trying to impact the next release of code. And in a way, it's the same discipline, but the perspective is different because rather than fueling a decision to which hardware stack goes faster, we're basically saying which code change is the most valuable, which code change is the most secure, which code change is the fastest, which code change should we make, and does it include configuration? If configuration is now part of code in the code base, well, then we can change number of threads, memory, caching, all these different types of things.
Now, Mark, we do see a lot of benchmarking today is at the very much at the unit performance testing level in a DevOps or an Agile environment. Before that piece of code is committed, this tends to be a highly repetitive test, very constant, same data, a very similar test environment every single time, running over and over and over again. And it actually makes a pretty good benchmark for evaluating a delta in performance for that particular execution cycle.
Yeah, go back and listen to the Perf Bytes episode where we talked about trending and calculating and the analysis of trend. And how to display that, make it easy so everyone can see. I just checked in some code and it sucks. The historic trend in Dynatrace or in Custom Tool or in the HP products, where you're looking at the trend over time, release over release, that really is, to some extent, your historic baseline or your historic benchmark. The benchmark is the whole test. The baseline is the measurement that actually trends over time. As the whatever looks like the status quo, this is sort of the thing that never changes. All of a sudden, boom, it goes 5 times faster. You're like, what happened? Yeah, exactly. All right, James.
We've kind of exhausted that whole benchmark thing, haven't we, Mark?
Yes, we have. We'll take a little break for a public service announcement.
You know them. You see them hit the end of an iteration and they just plain ran out of time for performance testing. You them convincing the VP of development to just fire all the testers. You see some other kids aren't testing at all. And you see the cool kids, well, you know, they're testing in prod. It can be tough under all that peer pressure just because you want to be cool too. But being cool isn't as important as it seems. Perf Bites encourages you to keep your own commitment to quality steadfast and not give in to those trendy, cool hipsters who don't know how to test and who, by the way, don't pay for what happens in prod. Stand your ground against emergency promotions and too fast releases directly to production without any testing whatsoever. Know that Perf Bites supports you because friends don't let friends deploy without testing.
And there's the public service announcement. Beautiful.
Yes.
James, what are your closing thoughts on benchmarking, especially the last pieces of advice you might give to Sandy?
Watch for the use of synonyms. You know, ask those follow-up questions and find out if the customer is really looking, as Mark noted, for the custom application, or if they're looking to evaluate their hardware or their environment against standard workloads. That's really the dividing line. And please go to the Wikipedia page on benchmarks. There's a lot of really cool ones out there. Also, go stop by the spec page, spec.org, S-P-E-C.org, and the Transaction Processing Council, TPC.org. Take a look at their documentation. It's great documentation, even if you never run a benchmark. But if you're charged with executing performance tests, there's a lot that you can draw from their documentation that you can incorporate into your own.
Yeah. And that's a really good point, right? Because you can learn about the model for what a benchmark is if you're the person defining and establishing one. My advice to Sandeep comes from the perspective, like, I'm making an assumption he might be a consultant or at least an internal consultant even to different groups, where there, if you're doing sort of a one-time project to compare things to the industry standard or even just evaluating different hardware, you're keep in mind that you're delivering value to that project as the creator of the benchmark and the auditor of the benchmark, and you want to treat things very fairly and be very transparent about what the workload, what the test definition is, and don't change it between all three of them. If somebody does need to change something, you have to balance it between all three. And compare that type of work. If you're ever being asked to get sucked in to do a benchmark, be sure to ask, are you interested in comparing to the industry? Because the industry has a bunch of results that we can compare to. Or are we really doing a custom benchmark internally? And let's then ask the last question, James, that you just pointed out as well. Are you sure we're not just doing some load testing to find bugs in your app and optimize them and go to production? Not that that's, like we pointed out, the language gets kind of interchangeable, but try to keep those three categories separate, either an industry standard benchmark, a custom benchmark that you are defining and employing versus we're just engaged in doing load testing and then optimizing and finding bugs and fixing things. So those are the three categories that I think keep my brain pretty separate. That does it, James. That's benchmarking.
Well, everyone, we have come to the end of another episode of Perf Bites.
We have. It's the first one here in 2017.
Yes.
Of course, I'm totally glad that we finally got around to helping Sandeep on this question about benchmarking. We hope that everyone else listening in is learning about benchmarking, baselining, and all sorts of interesting, crazy benchmarks. Go to the Wikipedia page. There's all sorts of stuff out there. And thanks again to everyone who just takes time to listen to the show today.
I would like to thank my mother for listening. And please recognize our sponsors. Call up your local HP sales rep or your Flood.io sales rep. Take them to lunch as a thank you for support of the show. If you really want to take them to lunch together, pop some popcorn and just watch and see what happens.
Yeah, you just try to keep the subject more personal.
Talk about the show, talk about performance testing,
weather,
performance engineering, cars,
ice storms.
Try to avoid the whole subject of, you know, religion or politics.
That's usually a good one. Or software. Just try not to talk about sales software.
And I would also like to point out that, Mark, today's show is powered by QBranch.
Ooh.
QBranch.
So
Q. Quartermaster to MI6.
Yes, today's show is powered by QBranch. We may have removed the GPS tracking implant from our forearms, but that doesn't stop us from finding the bad guys who like to steal copies of this podcast and sell it to Spectre. Yes, MI6 enforces copyrights now.
For more information about Perf Bites, please visit the show's website, www.perfbites.com, or follow us on the Twitter, the Tumblr, the Facebook, Spreaker.com. Of course, you can always tune in and subscribe to the Perf Bites podcast on iTunes, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, and testingpodcast.com. Just open up your favorite listening app, search for Perf Bites, and click on the subscribe button. And please send us an email with your questions or thoughts at ask@perfbites.com, or even leave us a voicemail at 77-LOAD-PERF. That's 775-623-7373.
775, you know that's in Nevada.
You know, we're going to be out there for Dynatrace Perform. We should go find our phone number. Find our phone box.
We should find out where we are. In the side of the road in the middle of the desert. There's a payphone. Yeah, James, I'm here. Hang on, let me. There's a little green guy. Want to use a phone? Hang on. Yes, the Perf Bites show and staff are supporters of the Practical Performance Analyst, the Performance Engineering Book of Knowledge, Test Bash, the Ministry of Testing, Computer Measurement Group, and the Workshop on Performance and Reliability. We'll be down in Wellington, New Zealand in February of 2017. Come and meet us there. And of course, the Software Test Professionals community of software testers. We'll always hope to see you at an STP conference, this time in Phoenix in March. Visit stpcon.com right now for more details. And of course, come join us for a live show, all sorts of one-on-one mentoring, aka single malt scotch tasting.
Everyone, thank you for listening. Have a great day. Catch us on the next episode of Perf Bites. Keep those letters and phone calls coming. By the way, I particularly like the holiday pound cake that one of the fans sent, but not the fruit cake, even though it was from Texas. And supposedly they make the best fruitcake in Fruitcake, Texas, but, you know, it was fruitcake. That's like saying, yeah, you know, it's like the tallest ant.
Not really big on the fruitcake, yeah. Fan. No, just not, no, not really good. No. Go with a seasonal cinnamon nutmeg kind of pound cake. Banana loaf is always good for me.
Banana nut bread, yeah.
Banana nut bread, yeah. You bet. You know those vaping guys that have the vapors instead of cigarettes? Yeah. The vaping, they have them without nicotine, and they have them flavored, and one of the flavors is banana nut bread.
So they'll get popcorn long with banana nut bread.
I know. I mean, what a way to die. That's awesome. Well, sorry we put James to rest here. It's an open coffin, but damn, the smell. Who's having that banana nut bread? That smells great. An embalming fluid can't even get rid of that. All right. Okay, man.
Thank you, everyone.
That's it.